Okay, at this time, it gives me great pleasure to introduce John from Pass Robles. Give him a hand.
My name is John. I am an alcoholic. And I am from Paso Robles. And, you know, it's a pleasure to come here tonight. There's a lot of new sobriety I see here. And looks like maybe I have some old sobriety too. My sobriety date is September 5th, 1988. I am... just your typical run-of-the-mill alcoholic. I liked booze the minute I tasted it. And I remember being in Denver as a little boy with my mother and stepdad at the time. And I was in a bar at night, and they're drinking and getting drunk. And I see my first homicide when I'm 5 years old. Some guy behind us got shot, and, you know, wow, you know, that's drama. That's the way life was in North Denver. And my sister was taken away from my mom when she was 2 years old, and she went to go live in a farm. It was a nice dairy farm, and I was really, really kind of pissed off because I wanted to go on that dairy farm with her. And so I had to stay with my mom for a little while, and when I was 7 years old, my mom took me to the farm, like for Gilligan's Island, for a, you know, 2 week visit, and I ended up staying there until I graduated from high school. So I used to like to tell a lot of people that my mother and father were in the iron and steel business. My mother used to iron, and my dad, you know. Anyway, I went through high school. Was raised in Berthoud, Colorado. Nice place. It's just great. I'd see these mountains every morning, the ones you see in the front of the Coors Can, you know, those two mountains, the Twin Peaks. And I got to look at those every morning when I got up and had to milk these cows. 125 cows. Boy, I pulled enough tits in the world to, let me tell you. And I could squirt a tit about 30 foot. And I'd have those cats lined up and I'd just squirt the old faces. Anyway, as a kid growing up, I was always kind of had an empty spot in my soul. No mom, no dad. I was raised with my grandparents. And I was real kind of sad about that. And I see all my other friends, they all had mothers, they all had fathers. But I had grandparents. And they were very, very good people. And of course, they got me into catechism, and I became a good little Catholic boy. And I got into high school and became a jock, and was pretty good in sports. And so I kind of found a spot there where I could be loved, and I had my fellow students and that kind of stuff. And I said, wow, this is kind of cool. And I got people out there that are accepting me for who I am. And then high school was over. And it was like, ooh, time to get to real life now. I have to get to work. Well, I ended up getting a gal pregnant. I was 18 years old. And I started working. That's what you got to do. You had got to marry the girl, got to work. And I was working for the city of Longmont as in this water and sewer department. And I was not a drug dealer, but I was a turd pusher, and that's what I did. I had to work that sewer department, and I did that till about 71, and I noticed that, you know, my drinking was starting to escalate a little bit more. I was getting drunk a little bit more. I couldn't leave the booze away or alone. And I knew I probably had a problem way back then. And I really wasn't getting in trouble with the law yet. And so then I think 1971, I started working for the Longmont Police Department when I was 21 years old. And, you know, I thought I didn't want to do this kind of work, but it was actually pretty rewarding at the time. I thought, wow, I'm out here, I can help a lot of people, and, you know, I can do a lot of things. I can put my Catholicism into use, and I can help people out. Well, as it turned out, I did okay in Longmont, and then I started working this undercover stuff. It was called MEG. It was called a Metropolitan Enforcement Group, and it was a precursor to DEA at the time. And I really liked working the undercover stuff, and it was really kind of cool. But then it came time for that to get over, and by this time I've been to a lot of departments around Denver, around Colorado, and I started with the Denver Police Department in 1974. And so I thought I was pretty much of a hot shot, and I had a big ego, you know, all the stuff that goes with it. And, you know, things were just going my way. Everything I touched, it turned to gold. I mean, I bought my first house in 1974 when my pickup got full of the ashtray. I'd turn it in and say, well, you know, it's time to go get a new pickup, and live this kind of lifestyle. And I was pretty much too big for my own britches, is what it boiled down to. I didn't know anything about humility. I just knew that I had to drink every night that I got off shift. Then it got to the point that I started drinking on duty, which I swore I'd never, ever, ever do. And then it got to the point that I partnered up with one partner, and we would put the booze in back of the car, in back of our patrol car, and get stinking drunk on duty. And it wasn't good. You know, at this time I started climbing up in rank and started, you know, doing all kinds of good stuff. And my drinking kept escalating. And, you know, after you built your frame, your house on a deck of cards, when that deck of cards comes down, it is terrible. You stand there completely naked in front of God and country, in front of everybody, and they look at you as to what a big fucking liar that you are. That was me. I was a big fucking liar. I was a cheat. I was all the bad stuff that goes along with alcoholism. I was all that. And it was hard for me to look at myself in the mirror. I thought I could fill that void up with women. I thought I could fill that void up with booze. I thought I could fill that void up with drugs. And, you know, I thought I'd never get to this point. I was working with a partner. We had a Class 3 license. If anybody doesn't know what a Class 3 license is for firearms, we could sell anything from machine guns to silencers to, and, you know, it's all legit. And we were selling to the bikers. We were selling, you know, to the Vato lowriders. we were selling to the white supremacist. We didn't care as long as we made the money. And, you know, we were having a great time. And I remember one time, I got to go back a little bit. When I was a rookie, I remember I went to bed drunk. They called me up about 3 o'clock in the morning, and they arrested this little guy, illegal alien. He ran into the sergeant's car, and they called me in there because they needed somebody to speak Spanish. And my brain's not working good at that time in the morning, and they got this poor little guy in the room there, and everybody's questioning me. He can't understand what everybody's saying, and you know, the poor guy is just like, you know, so I walked in there, and the first thing they said, John, ask him his name. I looked at him, I said, what's your name? You know? You know? Everybody started laughing, even this little illegal alien, he started laughing too. So then finally we got to it, you know, como se llama and everything else, and then we got to it, and it was pretty cool. Then he said, you know, he was drunk, he ran into the sergeant's car, he was sorry, you know, please forgive me, and that was the end of that. Away I went home. And, but I remember going there, and one of my fellow officers says, John, you really smell boozy. How much have you been drinking? I said, quite a bit. And, so I said, well, I should have known with all these different signs that were coming up, you know, and all this other stuff. Then I started getting in more and more problems at work when I was working in Denver. And wasn't a good thing. Wasn't a good thing at all. you know, when you have a bond with another copper, you're both working the same car, you kind of depend on each other, you know. You have each other's back. It's like when you're on the streets, you have each other's back. Well, we have each other's back too. And, you know, you become like brothers. And my buddy's name was Dave DeFoya. He was a great guy. And he got 3 bullets pumped into his chest in February 10th of 1980. And that's when I became a god-awful, awful, awful alcoholic. I had no business wearing a badge at that time. No business whatsoever. I was doing things I shouldn't be doing. I was very brutal at some times, and I didn't care about the public. And I had, like I said, I had no business wearing that badge. But I was with a little bit of fear there. I said, you know, what am I going to do? Well, I wish I would have known about Alcoholics Anonymous back then. I remember they put me on Antabuse. Hated that shit. I had to go to Denver General Hospital and drink it in the Kool-Aid form. And the nurse would watch me and I'd drink that shit. And they said, don't ever drink. Well, I went a few months doing this, not drinking, and then one day I said, you know, that overpowering urge to have a drink, because my choice of drink was a tall bottle of Miller's and a double shot of Jack Daniels. And I stopped in this one bar, and the guy said, John, where have you been? We haven't seen you for a long time. Well, said, I'm back now. And I drank that first bottle down. Man, did that taste good. I took it down on one gulp. Took a shot down, and he set me up another bottle, another couple shots. And I just started nursing that second bottle and getting that good beer belch out, you know how you do. And, you know, I was just like feeling this flash. Anybody in here has ever drank on Antabuse?
Yes.
No fun. No fun. My neck started swelling up, and it was just like, ow, and I couldn't hardly breathe. And I went home, and my wife was there, and she said, what'd you do? And I said, I drank. She goes, you stupid son of a bitch. What the hell's wrong with you? I'm going to call the ambulance. I said, no, no, I'm going to die here. I can't go because I'm too stubborn. I'm too stubborn. I can't do it. So I stayed there and I suffered all frickin' night. I went to work the next day. This is how God works. The first call I get was an ambulance call. The lady's out there with her husband. Ah, he drank on his antabuse, that son of a bitch. Look at him right there. I said, wow. So I'm really feeling sorry for him. So I got down. I pet my head. It'll be okay, buddy. But I was riding with his rookie, and he was actually riding with me. And he said, John, what are you spending so much time on this alcoholic for? Struck me, this alcoholic. That was me yesterday. This alcoholic, I was just a closet frickin' drinker. So I thought, you know, I'm not too far from a lot of other people. You know, I see a lot of people out there drinking in bars, drinking at home, hiding it, doing the things that we do, and then being ashamed the next day, and all the blackout drinking, and, you know, just the god-awful bullshit that we put ourselves through. And for all you new people, you don't have to go out there and do that. Please, do not go out there and do that. You can stay here. You've found a home here. You know, I remember one time I was at my partner's house, another partner after my other one died, and his name was C.D. Burton, and he told me to come over to the house that night because we had about, I don't know, 700, 600 pounds of grass that we were going to boil down and make into oil. And we had some guy out there cooking it and, you know, doing this stuff. And so we're going to eat. Yeah, they say cops have the best dope. They're right. So he says, you want a steak, John? I said, yeah, that sounds pretty good. You have mushrooms and everything on it. You have the gravy going and everything, and we're cutting it up. And he's over there laughing his ass off, and we're smoking a little dope. And he says, how do you like those mushrooms, John? I said, what do you mean? He goes, they're great, aren't they? Well, we stayed up for 10 hours just nothing but laughing with those damn things. Yeah, the old magic mushrooms. And I didn't drive that night for sure. And so I remember, you know, going home and thinking, gosh, what are you doing, John? You're supposed to be upholding the law, and you're breaking the law. You're doing all kinds of stuff and all this other stuff. So I finally got myself into so much trouble that I was charged by the district attorney's office in out of Golden, Jefferson County Sheriff's Department, came to arrest me. And I was driving to my house, and, you know, thought everything was, you know, great and honky-dory. And as soon as I got to my house, I saw about, you know, six cop cars coming behind me, and my house is already filled up with cops already. And I mean, when I got out of the car, I had every gun in the world drawn at me, and they handcuffed me and took me to jail. And I was in utter shock. I said, wow, what'd I do? You know? How dare these son of bitches rip me? So, of course, the news crews came out there, and they were at my house, and then they bonded me out that night, I believe it was, and I had to go to stay at some friend's house with my family because I had the news people at my house in Littleton. And I remember waking up in the morning, and the first thing I look at is my wife, and she's looking at me, and she has this look of, what the fuck did you do? And I'm going like, I messed up. And so I went ahead, instead of getting fired, I went ahead and resigned. Took all my back pay, moved, took a, went to geographical, went to Arizona, to Phoenix, and got a job out there, and still drinking, and I was flying back and forth to court. And my lawyer told me, he says, you know, John, they're offering you a good deal. He said, they're offering you 90 days in county jail. I suggest you take it. Me, being the egomaniac that I was back then, said, no way. If they got 90 days, they got shit. I said, we could take this to trial and win. He says, John, let's not do this, really. You're looking at a lot of years. I said, no way. Well, we went to court. And I got convicted. 12 years in prison. Part of my story. Prison is not a good place for an ex-cop. You don't want to drop the soap in the shower there. And I thought, my God, this is what drinking has got me into. Of course, while I was locked up, I lost my wife. I came out, when I got out, I had an ex-wife, I had an ex-dog, had an ex-dog, ex-car, I had an ex-everything. I didn't have anything. And my mother had been in this program since 1973, and she kept in good contact with me. And I went in general population. And the only reason I did was because I could not see being locked up for 23 hours and going out for 1 hour. I know I did 4 years, and I said, I'm going to be a basket case by the time I get out of here. If I'm going to die, you know, let me die on my feet, please, Lord. I made a prayer to God. Always been religious. My God took care of me. I went through maximum. The first day I was in there, I got in a fight. I went to medium, minimum, finally the honor camp. And everywhere I went, I had to prove myself. And you got to keep your mouth shut in there and mind your own frickin' business. And I went in there with a lot of people that I put in, and there was this motorcycle gang, and they were called the Sons of Silence out of Denver. They got the chapters all over hell and back now, but I went in with a lot of those guys. A lot of those guys got popped for drugs and for some other stuff, and people were rolling over on them. And a lot of those guys were doing protective custody, and I was out walking around out in the yard. And but I met a few of them that went out in the yard too, and it was, it wasn't too pleasant. And I remember my buddy, first of all, let me back up. I remember H and I came in there. H and I came in for AA meetings in there, and thank God they did, to see these people come in to help us out. I was getting AA on the inside, but But I was still getting messed up on the inside. I was drinking the prison hooch, and I got a bugler can of a prison jack for, I think, 3 or 4 packs of smoke, something like that. That stuff will get you fucked up. And smoking those little pinners. I guess you know what that is, huh? Little pinner. Yeah, I'll take a couple of those, please. And so it was pretty cool. And I got what I wanted, and you know, I started to actually make friends with people in there. And even some of those Raider people I did. You know, dirty fucking Raider people. I love you, brother. And Cowboy fans, too. We may meet in the Super Bowl, you know. So, be ready. You know, I'm very, very grateful. You know, I had my leg chopped off here about a little over a year ago. And sicker than a dog, my good buddy Jim has been like an angel. Came over to my house. My wife was in the Bay Area. And I said, you know, I'm really sick, buddy. I think I gotta go to the doctor. And so he took me to the emergency there in Twin Cities. And I had a big old thing in the bottom of my foot with a big ulcer or something. I didn't know what it was. My blood pressure was like 60 over 40. One thing I know that you can do in AA is you can ask for help. And you'll get it. A lot of us are too freaking stubborn to ask for help. My buddy came out to get me. I was just going to wait till Monday. I would have probably been dead, you know, sitting in my chair watching TV going, you know, here I am. But my buddy Jim came to get me and took me to the hospital, and they cut off part of my toe and part of my foot. And, of course, my daughter has a sense of humor like me, and she said, well, you know, Dad, you're going to need a tow truck now to haul you around. So, yeah, this is great. I'm grateful. I'm walking. I was in a wheelchair. I was in that little walker. I had a cane. Sometimes I use a cane when I go to the beach or something like that. But I'm walking. It's a miracle. And I'm sober. You know, being sober one day at a time is a miracle. And a lot of people say, I don't believe in God. Well, you know what, mother effer? You're sober one day. That's a miracle right there. That is a miracle right there if you're sober one day. But we're too stupid to look at that sometimes. And here I get out of the joint, and in February of 1988, I get off the plane in San Jose. I am met there by my mom. And a whole bunch of AA people. They don't even know me. They know my mom. They came to give her support, came to give me support. And I started getting sober at the Five Cities Fellowship in Fremont, California. A lot of these people I have still close friends to this day. I'm a godfather to one little gal over, well, about 26 years now. And, you know, it's been a wonderful life. You know, when I got out, I thought, what can I do? I got out and I started working, you know, any job I can get. I was short order cook. I went down to the Longshore Union. I'd get a good gig out there, make some great money. And I always saw, and this one place, I always saw this truck driving school across the And I said, you know, I'm going to go try that. And I did. And I got my Class A license, got my hazmat, started driving for Williams Tank Line, driving, hauling gasoline around California, out of the Bay Area. This is how God works again. 90 days later, guess what? I'm working for a major oil company. I'm working for Chevron. And I can't believe it. I'm looking down the side in my mirror, and I'm driving a Chevron tanker down the road, going down 101. I do a lot of loads in Oakland. I do them in Hayward. I do them all over the place. Or I drive, you know, one time I came to Santa Maria out here and dropped a load off and dropped them off in Paso or Morro Bay or whatever. And it was just like, thank you, Lord. Thank you for letting me have this sobriety. Thank you for letting me have a second chance. Thank you for all this stuff that you've given me. And I remember going in there, taking the drug test that you have to do when you have a hazmat. I was never afraid to take those. I was never afraid to take those. And it was a blessing because I was so well, deeply entrenched into AA that I could not think of even taking a drink. And this is how much I love the program. I mean, I don't want to come out here and sound like I'm walking on water or I'm holier than thou or any of that kind of stuff. Because even to this day, you know, I still have problems. And, you know, it goes with the territory. I still have problems. Thank you, buddy. And, excuse me. Yeah, I still have problems just like anybody else. You know, sometimes not enough money coming in. You know, that feels in this day and age. Sometimes, you know, my wife and I get in a good argument, you know, and she usually kicks my ass. So they say happy wife, happy life. So that, you know, that's what you got to do. And I'm blessed to have some very, very good friends in the program. I'm beyond blessed. And I know that, you know, when I was in the Bay Area, I got myself a sponsor. The first year that I went into AA, and the first place I went to, it was a place that was just full of turmoil and drama. It was guys chasing the gals. It was gals chasing the guys. It was 13-stepping, here we come, baby. My first year in sobriety. And by this time, you know, I was out of prison. I was, you know, well-built at that time. And I thought, wow, this AA is kind of cool. It's kind of like a beer joint, except without the booze. And you could pick up the chicks. Well, you know, I thought that was too good to be true because my sponsor got a hold of my ass and he said, buddy, did you come here to get laid or did you come here to get sober? And I said, shit. You know, he said, this is not Burger King. You can't have it your way, buddy. And I'm going like, wow. He said, you're going to have to straighten up your act, John, or I'm going to have to fire you, period. And I'm thinking, well, I can't talk to this crusty old bastard that way because he is, I have a lot of respect for him. The guy was 35 years sober back then. And he knew Bill Wilson. He was friends with him. And he said, you know what, John? He said, you can try your con jobs and try all your other stuff. He said, I've heard it all. You know, he was sponsoring everybody from Hell's Angels to Mr. GQ to Mr. Middle of the Road person to the lowest person in the world. And one thing he did not like was a liar, and he did not like any bullshit at all. And I thank my Lord that he was in my life, and I remember at his desk one time in third step, and we got on our knees and we did the third step prayer. We both got down on our knees, and it was very emotional. I had my fourth and fifth step stuff that I swore that I would go to the grave with. And he was so good and so wise. He says, John, he says, because I was worried about statutes of limitations, you know, and he says, you know what, John, he says, your fourth and fifth step stuff, he says, if you don't feel comfortable sharing it with me, he says, don't. He says, go see a priest or go see somebody you can trust. But he said, you have to get this shit off your soul. You have to get this shit off your soul. You can't keep this on your soul, because if you do, it's going to frickin' ruin you. So I went to go see a priest, and I told him what I did, and this priest said, is that all? I mean, I've given him everything. And he says, is that it? I said, yeah. I said, I heard worse. He said, I heard worse, buddy. This guy was a priest to a lot of us. And he was in the program, too. And, you know, there's a lot of great shame, you know, when we're out there drinking, we do things that we're ashamed of. And we feel really, really bad the next day. And how many people in here have said, man, I'm going to quit drinking. When you wake up in the morning, you wake up with that hangover. You got that crew little, and you're just like, oh my God, jeez, I can't, dear God, I'm not going to drink again. Guess what? In the afternoon, guess what we're doing? We're drinking again. Can't stop it. This disease is insidious. This disease will get us and put us down to our knees. I don't care how tough you are or who you think you are. This disease brings us together. It doesn't matter if you're an ex-cop. Doesn't matter if you're a millionaire. Doesn't matter if you're a dishwasher. Doesn't matter if you go out and sweep the streets or if you're homeless. This disease, once it gets hold of us, it'll take us down to the frickin' ground, guys. We're all in here tonight for what reason? Because we want to stay sober. That's the reason we're in here for. We all want to stay sober, every one of us. You know, and we're in here with a fellowship. We have love for each other in here. I feel love in here for everybody. And, you know, that's just the way it is. You know, you get in here, you make good friendships, you start working the program, you start working the steps. I can't say how good it is to work the 12 and 12. Jim and I usually go to a 12 and 12 every Monday. We go to a big book study on Thursdays, and we go to other meetings too. And a lot of times I'll read that big book again, I'll say, wow, it makes sense, you know. But I know one thing, the more that I'm in AA, the less I know. And when I first came into AA, I couldn't fit in the door there because my head was too fucking big. Swear to God. Now, AA has kind of got me right size, so I'm downsized now to where I'm supposed to be. But sometimes when I start getting a little bit too grandiose, and it says in the big book, you know, where we have that, we get that in the 12 by 12 too, where we get the big shot-ism. Some people like to call it my assholism, and it's the truth, you know. It's the truth, you know. Sometimes these old behaviors come out, and I'm thanking God that I have this program to keep them under control. You know, I can go on and on and on with the wartime stories and all that other stuff, and I mean, there's plenty more, you know, shoot 'em ups and all kinds of stuff, and but you know, that's in the past, and I can't live in the past. But I still have to have my past there to know where I came from. And the time I bring my past up is when I come maybe to a speaker meeting like this, and I bring up some of my bullshit that I had back then. And sometimes I'm thinking, wow, that was really me. I was really doing this shit. I was really, you know, drinking in a car, in a police car. I was actually snorting a line in the police car. I was actually smoking a joint in the police car, and I'm going, really? You know? So my life has changed, you know. I'm just, my story's not unique because I'm just a typical alcoholic like everybody else in here. We all have our stories. If everybody had their stories and paperback in this room right now, we could all have bestsellers in here. I mean, everybody has a story to tell, and how they got sober, and how they're doing today, and how it keeps on working. And I've seen people in here. I know one guy from the Bay Area. His name was Shaky Steve. He was coming to the meetings, and he would be shaking. And I'm going like, damn. And he'd be smelling like booze. And then he'd be sober like one day. The next day, he'd be out there drinking again. Then he'd come into a meeting one day sober. And this went on for about 3 or 4 years in Fremont. And then one day he came in and just thought, and he was trying to get sober again. And then he had 2 days of sobriety. And then he came in 3 days, and we're saying, wow, that's kind of cool. You know, we never seen Shaky Steve have 3 days of sobriety. Then he had 4 days of sobriety. Then he had 5 days of sobriety, and then, you know, his face is starting to clear up a little bit, and it's not getting so red. Then he had a couple weeks. Then he had 30 days, and it was just like, that's a miracle. That is a freaking miracle. 30 days for this guy was a miracle. Then he got 60. Then 90, and then he started doing it, and he started looking good, he started dressing good, he started smelling good, you know? And, you know, he knew the big book inside and out, and the day that he got his 1 year sobriety, brought the house down. And he's still sober today. Brought the house down. You know, for some of us out there that think I can never, ever fucking stop, we can. One day at a time. This program is not 30 years at a time, 20 years at a time, 10 years at a time, 5 years at a time. It's one day at a time. That's how we keep sober, one day at a time. That's it. Keep it simple, sweetheart. That's it. Keep it simple, sweetheart. Just one day at a time. But oh no, you tell an alcoholic, oh, I can't do that, you know. You know, I'm going to stay sober now for 20 years, you know. Well, I just got my 26th year in September. And all thanks to this program, my friend right there has 38 years. And he's a much better speaker than me. I'll tell you that for a fact. You know, I am I'm blessed. I thank you, good people of Santa Maria, for having me over here. They call me Bronco Johnny and Paso for obvious reasons. And I want to say to everybody in here, God bless you. Thank you.
Guys, let's give Bronco another round of applause. I want to thank you, John, for speaking.